ओमज्ञान्तिमनन्दस्य ज्ञानाञ्जलशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरुवे नमः। जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्य प्रभुनित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैतकदाधार श्रीवासादि गौरभक्तवृन्द। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। ओके, 14 चैप्टर फर्स्ट वर्स। श्री भगवान उवाच, परम भूय प्रवक्ष्यामि ज्ञानानां ज्ञानम् उत्तमं यद्ज्ञात्वा मुनय सर्वे परां सिद्धिं इतो गतः। द सुप्रीम मास्टर ऑफ गॉड सेड, अगेन आई शुड रिप्लाई टू यू दिस सुप्रीम विजडम, द बेस्ट ऑफ ऑल नॉलेज, knowing which all the sages have attained the supreme perfection. From the 7th chapter to the end of the 12th chapter, Sri Krishna in detail reveals the absolute truth, the supreme personality of Godhead. Now the Lord himself is further enlightening Arjuna. If one understands this chapter through the process of philosophical speculation, he will come to an understanding of devotional service. In the 13th chapter, it was clearly explained that by humbly developing knowledge, one may possibly freed from material entanglement. It has also been explained that it is due to association with the modes of nature that the living entity is entangled in this material world. Now in this chapter, the Supreme Personality explains what those modes are, how they act, how they bind, and how they give liberation. The knowledge explained in this chapter is proclaimed by the Supreme Lord to be superior to the knowledge given so far in other chapters. By understanding this knowledge, various great sages attain perfection and transfer to the spiritual world. The Lord now explains the same knowledge in a better way. This knowledge is far, far superior to all other processes of knowledge thus far explained, and knowing this, many attain perfection. Thus, it is expected that one who understands this 14th chapter will attain perfection. Okay. Any question? Okay, next verse. Aritra Prabhu, you can read.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Verse 2. Idam jnanam paashritya mama sadharmyam agatah sarge api nopajayante pralayena vyathanti cha. Translation: by becoming fixed in this knowledge, one can attain to the transcendental nature like my own. Thus established, one is not born at the time of creation or disturbed at the time of dissolution. Purport: after acquiring perfect transcendental knowledge, one acquires qualitative equality with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, becoming free from the repetition of birth and death. One does not, however, lose his identity as an individual soul. It is understood from Vedic literature that the liberated souls who have reached the transcendental planets of the spiritual sky always look to the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, being engaged in his transcendental loving service. So even after liberation, the devotees do not lose their individual identities. Generally, in the material world, whatever knowledge we get is contaminated by the three modes of material nature. Knowledge which is not contaminated by the three modes of nature is called transcendental knowledge. As soon as one is situated in that transcendental knowledge, he is on the same platform as the Supreme Person. Those who have no knowledge of the spiritual sky hold that after being freed from the material activities of the material form, the spiritual identity becomes formless without any variegatedness. However, just as there is material variegatedness in this world, in the spiritual world, there is also variegatedness. Those in ignorance of this think that spiritual existence is opposed to material variety. But actually, in the spiritual sky, one attains the spiritual form. there are spiritual activities, and the spiritual situation is called devotional life. That atmosphere is said to be uncontaminated, and there is one, and that one is equal in quality with the Supreme Lord. To obtain such knowledge, one must develop all the spiritual qualities. One who thus develops the spiritual qualities is not affected either by the creation or by the destruction of the material world.
Okay. Any comment or question? Next. Chintamani Mataji and Prabhuji.
Mama Yomi Mahat Janha Tasmin Karbhun Dadhaniyaham Sambhavaha Sarva Bhutanam Tate Bhavati Bharatava. The total material substance called Brahman is a source of birth, and it is that Brahman that I impregnate, making possible the births of all living beings, the son of Bharata. This is an explanation of the world. Everything that takes place is due to the combination of Kshetra and Kshetrajna, the body and the spirit soul. The combination of material nature and the living entity is made possible by the Supreme God Himself. The Mahat Tattva is the total cause of the total cosmic manifestation, and that total substance of the material cause, in which there are three modes of nature, is sometimes called Brahman. The Supreme Personality impregnates that total substance, and that innumerable universes. The total material substance, the Mahat Tattva, is described as Brahman in the Vedic literature. Mundaka Upanishad 1.1.9 Tasmat Eva Brahma Nama Rupam Annam Cha Jayate. The Supreme Person impregnates that Brahman with the seeds of the living entity. The 24 elements, beginning from earth, water, fire, and air, are all material energy, and they constitute Mahat Brahma, or the great Brahman, the material nature. As explained in the 7th chapter, beyond this there is another superior nature, the living entity. Into material nature, the superior nature is mixed by the will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and thereafter all living entities are born of this material nature. The scorpion lays its eggs in piles of rice, and sometimes it is said that the scorpion is born out of rice. But the rice is not the cause of the scorpion. Actually, the eggs were laid by the mother. Similarly, material nature is not the cause of the birth of the living entity. The seed is given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and they only seem to come out as products of material nature. Thus, every living entity, according to his past activity, has a different body created by this material nature, so that the entity can enjoy or suffer according to his past deeds. The Lord is the cause of all the manifestations of living entities in this material world. Hare Krishna.
Yeah, okay. So Brahman here is actually another category of Brahman, which is also called as Mahatattva. So in this context, Brahman is Mahatattva. Okay, any question?
Yeah, but Brahman, it has in a particular, when it is being used, sometimes like Atma, this refers to the mind also, it is referred to the Atma also. So in certain context, it becomes a little confusing.
Yeah, it is referred to in different contexts differently. But it does not become confusing, because here Prabhupada is clearly defining the meaning of Brahman. And in other contexts also, we can actually understand clearly that when it is referred to Atma, so then it is Atma, then it is not Paramatma. Sometimes Brahman refers to Paramatma, sometimes it is referring to Absolute Truth, Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Supreme Brahman, so different. But we can understand by the context.
Even the effulgence. Even the Lord's effulgence is Brahman.
Yeah. So that is one aspect of his, the absolute truth, you know, that is one aspect of the absolute truth. Yeah, okay. So next verse. Yeah, Sri Kumar Thun.
Yeah. Next verse. Sarvai Nirasu Sankaya Murtaya.
One second. I think my internet is running slow, so I have to connect on what. Yeah, okay, so good.
So we shall I read?
Yes, yeah.
Text 4. Sarvai yanasu tantaya muttaya sambhubhantiya tatam brahma mahad yone aham vidya sadaya pita. It should be understood that all species of life, O son of Kunti, are made possible by birth in this material nature, and that I am the truth-giving father, purpose. In this verse, it is clearly explained that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is the original father of all living entities. The living entities are combinations of the material nature and the spiritual nature. Such living entities are seen not only on this planet, but on every planet, even on the highest, where Brahma is situated. Everywhere there are living entities within the earth. These are living entities even within water and within fire. All these appearances are due to the mother, material nature, and Krishna's seed-giving purpose. The purpose is that the material world is impregnated with living entities. We come out in the various forms at the time of creation according to their past deeds.
Yeah, so this is one of the important verses for Bhakti Shastri, which actually gives the evidence that Krishna is the father of all the living entities. Okay. Next. Ujjwala Madhavi, you are there?
Yes, Rose. Hare Krishna. Fifth shloka. Sattvam rajastama iti guna prakriti sambhavaha nibadnanti mahabaho dehi dehi namavyayam. Material nature consists of three modes, goodness, passion and ignorance. When the eternal living entity comes in contact with nature, O mighty armed Arjuna, he becomes conditioned by these modes. But the living entity, because he is transcendental, has nothing to do with this material nature. Still, because he has become conditioned by the material world, he is acting under the spell of the three modes of material nature. Because living entities have different kinds of bodies in terms of the different aspects of nature, they are induced to act according to that nature. This is the cause of the varieties of happiness and distress.
Yeah, okay. Sudama Madhavi, are you there? Okay.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna Madhavi. Okay, you have joined? Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm not in a position to read, Prabhu.
Hearing only. Okay. Tatra sattvam nirmalatvat prakashakam anamayam sukha sangena badnati jnana sangena Chanaga. O sinless one, the mode of goodness being purer than the others is illuminating and it frees one from all sinful reactions. Those situated in that mode become conditioned by a sense of happiness and knowledge. The living entity is conditioned by material nature out of various types. One is happy, another is very active, and another is helpless. All these types of psychological manifestations are causes of the activities, entities, condition, status in nature. However, how they are differently conditioned is explained in this section of Bhagavad Gita. The mode of goodness is first considered. The effect of developing the mode of goodness in the material world is that one becomes wiser than those otherwise conditioned. A man in the mode of goodness is not so much affected by material miseries, and he has sense of advancement in material knowledge. The representative type is the Brahmana, who is supposed to be in the mode of goodness. This sense of happiness is due to understanding that in the mode of goodness, one is more or less free from sinful reactions. Actually, in the Vedic literature, it is said that the mode of goodness means greater knowledge and greater sense of happiness. The difficulty here is that when a living entity is situated in the mode of goodness, he becomes conditioned to feel that he is advanced in knowledge and is better than others. In this way, he becomes conditioned. The best examples are the scientist and the philosopher. Each is very proud of his knowledge, and because they gently improve their living condition, they feel a sort of material happiness. This sense of advanced happiness in conditioned life makes them bound by the mode of goodness of material nature. As said, they are attracted towards working in the mode of goodness, and as long as they have an attraction for working in that way, they have to take some type of body in the modes of nature. Thus, there is no likelihood of liberation or of being transferred to the spiritual world. Repeatedly, one may become a philosopher, a scientist, a poet, and repeatedly become entangled in the same disadvantages of birth and death. But due to the illusion of the material energy, one thinks that sort of life is pleasant. Yeah, so the more of goodness, the more the person has freedom. He can make choices. Otherwise, passion and ignorance, the freedom is very restricted. Right? So, any question from this?
Can you give an example of how it is restricted when one is in passion and ignorance?
Remember. See, because the problem is, so it's a cycle, and it is also dependent on the previous impressions. Okay. So now, what do you think? If a person is a more of ignorance and passion, he is mostly dictated by the previous impressions. He is mostly controlled by the previous impressions. Because, see, the problem is that with the karmas, the karma does not get over. Just by destroying the karma is not over. Why? Because the desire for doing that karma is always there. So, kutam is there. Right? We have kutam, which is upcoming in the upcoming lifetime. So, whatever choices you are making in this life, it is actually creating future impressions also, because of your choices in the previous lives. So it is also creating future impressions, and when you take birth in the future, those impressions become your present impressions. And again, so similarly, it is like, you are mostly controlled by the modes of material nature, like you are unable to get out of it. So even if you know that something is wrong or we should not do certain things, but still, because of your tendencies, very high tendency inclination, you give up to that. And so that's why you get controlled by those tendencies. So generally, it's very difficult to come out of passion and ignorance, and especially ignorance. Ignorance, the freedom is very restricted, extremely restricted. I mean, it is like saying that you don't have any freedom also, because whatever choices you are going to make, the past tendencies will influence you a lot, and probably it will overwhelm you. So you won't be able to control, and you won't be able to make certain choices which are out of that, right? So it will, and that will create entanglement. So I'm not saying that it cannot happen. It is possible, but it requires extremely high determination, and I think the influence of the scriptures also, like how much a person is willing to implement the scriptures in their life. So for devotees, this can become easier compared to the non-devotees. So devotees, they will also have high impressions, influence of all these impressions. They will have also higher tendencies. But because of transcendental in touch with the transcendental modes or in Krishna consciousness, that will help them to a lot of extent, and Krishna will personally interfere also. So it will help. Mm. But still, for devotees also it is difficult. It is not so easy. As we know that how many devotees can control their lust, anger, envy, See, maybe certain things you will be able to control. But then the question is, are you able to get free from your ego? It's a big thing. And generally it's very difficult for any devotee also. How very rare devotees actually they get rid of their egos. And generally they observe that those who are in the mode of goodness, they are able to get rid of their egos. That's an observation. You see that our the advanced devotees that we see in our movement, so their behavior is more in the mode of goodness. That's what we observe. If someone is passionate, there are chances that that devotee might commit aparadhs in the future. Or passionate, because if someone is passionate, then they have to balance their passionate nature with some goodness also. They have to be really be tolerant, calm, peaceful and all. Otherwise, it is difficult. So, devotional service definitely helps to a lot of extent, because devotees do also come from ignorance and passion, the modes of passion, ignorance. And as we know that in Kali Yuga, actually speaking, we all have, the influence of all these three modes. It is not like just one mode. It is a combination of all the three modes, So, passion is obviously there because the material world is very, itself is a passionate place. And then ignorance is there because we have been trained in a certain way since a long time. So, the ignorance is there. And then the goodness is there in the sense that we have taken up to Krishna consciousness, we have accepted, we are willing to surrender, and then, that is our desire and intention. So, the goodness is also there. And we are aware of certain things that we are supposed to do. So all three combinations are there. And so I think most important is, the sadhana is actually the most important for a devotee. And obviously the association of devotees. So sadhana and association will help to a lot of extent. Okay. Yeah. But for a materialistic person, they cannot... Yeah, they are unable to give up, because they don't have a higher taste. They don't have something which is transcendental or something they would like to surrender. When you have the intense desire to surrender to something, then only you can give up all these lower things. Or you have a higher taste, or you have a goal in your life that you will not be overcome by these things. So for example, there are a lot of motivational speakers in the world, and probably they had gone through all these experiences, being influenced by passion and ignorance. But I think over a period of time, they have learned many lessons and they have become very determined. So it is a practice, it's a big challenge and it is a difficult practice. One has to tolerate a lot. So, it is possible some people might be able to come to a more of goodness, but still, it is risky because they can fall down easily. They don't have any goal. And I guess that, most of these motivational speakers, they might be probably in the mode of passion rather than in the mode of ignorance. Because, we see this in the material world also. People who are actually determined right from the beginning, they only are successful in life. People who have a daily regular schedule, people who do not waste time, only these people, they actually can grow in the material world. They can influence others. They are the ones who are leading examples. It's a common thing. Any person who is a popular figure in the world, if you read about his personality, character, one thing you can understand that person does not waste any time. And he's focused on his goal, what he wants to achieve. He's very determined. Right? So, in our ISKCON society, we have sannyasis. The sannyasi's goal is to remain determined to follow brahmacharya practices. And also to travel and to preach. So if they are continuously engaged, then only they are good example for others. And so similarly, in the outside world also, people who are constantly striving to improve and maintain their study enthusiasm, they only actually, you know, they grow like anything. So, yeah, so it is like, you know, everything is about determination, finally. And determination basically comes from free will. So free will is, you know, generally it is in the mode of goodness and passion.
Okay.
Yeah, we see what happens. See, there are different categories of people. Some are some are extremely determined, or you can say that, you know, those who are really successful in life. They are the ones who are always trying to break their comfort zones and trying to create new barriers. That's the reason they become very successful, because they are always looking for challenges. And so so they are always creating some new kind of challenge, and they feel happy to, you know, pass that challenge. Okay. And then the second category of person is that, you know, they also put efforts. They also are working hard. They also are determined to a certain extent. But they are satisfied in their comfort zone. They don't want to go beyond that. They create a zone where that is the limitation for them. So then don't go beyond that. And the third category of person is they are always the most satisfied and happy in their comfort zone. They never put effort to go beyond that. So, like, you know, I mean, the Shastra basically talks about, so what I'm saying is, it is basically nothing but the Varnashram system, where you have the Brahmana, the Kshatriya, Vaishya, Sudras. So we know the Sudras, they are like in the mode of ignorance, because they don't care about anything else. They don't use their intelligence. They are satisfied serving the higher caste. They don't have intelligence, okay? They don't use that. And they are satisfied with that. So these are the categories of people, like the labor class, right? Mm-hmm. So they are always satisfied. They don't think about growing. You know, see, they are poor. They are probably not happy also in their life. But somehow they are, you know, they have accepted that kind of lifestyle. And they don't have any desire to go beyond that. So that is called more of ignorance, basically. Mm-hmm. And then those who are passionate, they want to achieve something in the material world.
Mm-hmm.
So they also create, you know, some kind of targets to achieve because of their passion.
Mm-hmm.
But they are miserable, you know, because the material world treats them in a very, in a very pessimistic way. Like, you know, from what they are expecting. So, and then finally, the people in the mode of goodness, means the Brahmanas, you know, they are actually the ones who are able to utilize their free will by detaching themselves from the material world. So it is very, it's a scientific system right from the beginning of, you know, the Lord has created a very scientific system. Even if you see the Vedic cosmology also, everything has a science, everything has a reason why it is like that. You have the upper planetary system, you have the lower planetary system, and you have our Earth in the middle. So, you know, why it is like that? Because obviously, the more you are passed, the more you go up. The more you are impassed, the more you go down. And if you are a balance of both the things, then you stay on the Earth planet. So it is logical. Right? So everything has a logic in spiritual, you know, the scriptures, everything has a logic.
But what is the... So you are telling those who are satisfied with serving the higher class, they are Shudra. They don't have any aspirations. Other than to just, you know, status quo, where they are, they want to stay there. Passionate people, those who are in the mode of passion, they are trying to endeavor for more and more and more. But I don't understand one thing. Say, like, how will you classify, I'm just using an example, these terrorists, okay? Or rather, the mastermind behind the terrorists. But they are also, will you say that they are in the mode of ignorance or they are in the mode of passion? They're definitely not in the mode of goodness.
Yeah, they are.
Okay. But
they are in the mode of, obviously, in the mode of ignorance.
But they are also using their intelligence. They're using their intelligence to inflict damage on other people. but they are
That is ignorance. How it is ignorance if a drunkard is using his intelligence to drink more and more? So that is ignorance. Right? So similarly, the terrorists also, they are also using their brains to infiltrate terrorism in different parts of the world. And so because the entire path only itself is actually, the thought process also is completely ignorant. That's why everything that they do is always ignorant. Right? So, yeah, even the Sudras, Sudras of the material world, they also work very hard. Like, they are sacrificing their, risking their life. The laborers, when they are doing construction, they are risking their lives. But then, so they are satisfied in what they are doing and they don't want to grow. Okay. So, and Kali Yuga, we know that everyone is a Sudra basically. No, as per Shastra, everyone is a Sudra.
This is what I was
is a different thing.
Trying to get to, yeah. That's what we
see,
hear.
Kali Yuga, everyone is a Sudra, but there is dominance of certain modes of material nature. So, see, on what basis we are talking about? Now, on the basis of spiritual understanding, everyone is a Sudra. It is not that everyone is Sudra in terms of material category. The entire system of Varnashram, the goal is to reach advance in spiritual life. Finally, you have to give up your particular position in the Varnashram, and you transcend those things, and then you attain, you go back to God. That should be the goal of everyone in Varnashram system. So, but in Kali Yuga, because no one is interested in spiritual life, that's the reason they are said that they are Kalau Sudha Sambhava, right? So, although they might be working very hard, so as I said earlier that, we have so many passionate people, like, so many big industrialists, and then, Bollywood film stars and all, so many, other personalities. They are also extremely determined, all of them, in their areas.
Yeah.
They are achievers in terms of material name and fame. They have led examples. They have achieved a certain status. And, in terms of material context, everyone is looking up to them. So, does it mean that they are Brahmanas? No. They are definitely not Brahmanas. They are also Sudras. Because they are deviating from spiritual principles. So, in that sense, everyone is a Sudra. But, when you talk about how you distinguish between a laborer and a businessman or a Vaishya and a Sudra in terms of material calculation, then we say that, okay, these guys are passionate. They are in the mode of passion. But actually, everyone is a Sudra. There is no doubt about it. So, practically, everyone is ignorant about spiritual life in Kali Yuga.
Yeah.
Right? So, there are two aspects to this. In fact, in the earlier days, there was no concept of material aspect. The Varnashram system was established so that people can gradually advance to spiritual understanding. But now in this particular Kali Yuga, it has degraded so much that the Varnashram has been seen in terms of material eyes also. So someone's like, why does Prabhupada, he says that he is using the example of the scientists and the philosophers. Now, the scientists, they are meat eaters, they are gamblers probably, and they are also drinking and smoking, they do smoking also. So then why Prabhupada is calling them in the mode of goodness? So why in the mode of goodness? See, in terms of material context. So you see, when you talk about the industrialist who is a passionate person who wants to achieve money, at the same time, these scientists and philosophers, they are using Gyan to, progress in the material world, right? So, so technically speaking, and for example, the teachers, the scientists, so those who are also professors, so their role is to teach others. So from the teaching perspective, Prabhupada is saying that these scientists and philosophers are in the mode of goodness. And probably, like, you know, he's comparing to the Brahmanas, because Brahmanas are supposed to guide and teach others, right? So yes. Similarly, scientists and philosophers, they are teaching others. And that's why Prabhupada probably is, you know, he's saying that they are, you know, concentrating on the more of goodness. Although it's a kind of a different example. Like, I mean, generally we think of someone in the mode of goodness as, you know, Brahmana, someone who has spiritual enlightenment and who has achieved that kind of platform, right? But here, the scientists and philosophers, they are also doing constant activities. It's just that they are guiding people and they are training, they are teaching. And they are using their knowledge, basically, to advance in material science. Okay, whereas the business people, they are using their, you know, their money. They want to, you know, achieve a lot of Lakshmi. So they are working hard for that. And that's why they are in the mode of passion, because they are involved in karma more. Scientists generally, they are oriented towards gaining knowledge, more and more material knowledge.
Yeah.
And these people, business people, are, you know, oriented towards more and more karma, you know, like that. So, and then Sudras are all, you know, they are more engaged in terms of, or you know, laborers. They are trying to just serve the higher castes. So in a material context, like if you see, we can still have a discrimination, and in the spiritual context, everyone is a Sudra. Yeah, I mean, that's how you identify your nature, basically. That you are passionate about working, or you are passionate about teaching. So if you are passionate about teaching, and you like to teach, and if you are tolerant, you have all these good qualities, then maybe you are more fit in the category of Brahmana, rather than in the category of a Karmi. Right, so every devotee has their own nature, you know, they have a particular nature, they have to identify and they have to engage that nature in Krishna service.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. So, any other devotee? Any comments? Okay, next. So Aritra, you can start.
It's 7, right? Verse 7.
Yeah, 7.
14 chapter, verse 7. Okay. Rajoragatmakam viddhi Trishna Sangha Samudbhavam Tannibadnahati Kaunteya Karma Sangena Dehinam. Translation: the mode of passion is born of unlimited desires and longings, O son of Kunti. And because of this, the embodied living entity is bound to material fruitive actions. Purport: the mode of passion is characterized by the attraction between man and woman. Woman has attraction for man and man has attraction for woman. This is called the mode of passion. And when the mode of passion is increased, one develops the hankering for material enjoyment. He wants to enjoy sense gratification. For sense gratification, a man in the mode of passion wants some honor in society or in the nation. And he wants to have a happy family with nice children, wife and house. These are the products of the mode of passion. As long as one is hankering after these things, he has to work very hard. Therefore, it is clearly stated here that he becomes associated with the fruits of his activities and thus becomes bound by such activities. In order to please his wife, children and society, and to keep up his prestige, one has to work. Therefore, the whole material world is more or less in the mode of passion. Modern civilization is considered to be advanced in the standard of the mode of passion. Formerly, the advanced condition was considered to be in the mode of goodness. If there is no liberation for those in the mode of goodness, what to speak of those who are entangled in the mode of passion? This is very interesting.
Yeah.
This is very interesting purport. Because you're talking about unlimited desires. So the purport begins with attraction between man and woman. We don't understand, like, you know, normally it's difficult to understand how is that related to passion in general. Like, that's not the first thing like we say unlimited desires and longings. The example that you are giving before, that I think manifests later, like someone who is a businessman wants to earn more and more money. Someone who is an intellectual wants to earn more and not money necessarily, but they want to make more and more contribution to their field of work. Someone who is a worker wants to make more and more progress, rise up through the ranks, maybe, you know, in the corporate, up the corporate ladder. So it's very difficult to correlate that desire to how the purpose begins. Attraction between man and woman. Can you just, you know, elaborate on that?
Yeah, see, basically, okay, it's not so difficult, you know, this point, because the creation is taking place by, you know, Brahma. And Brahma is what? In the mode of passion. So in order to create, you have to have mode of passion. So similarly, unless you are attracted to the opposite sex, you cannot create. And so everyone is attracted to the opposite sex in the material world, and that attraction is very common. You know, it is majorly present in all the living entities in the material world. So obviously, you know, we will not say that every man is driven by this desire, because there are many examples of people who are who try to abstain from this, you know, and who also have, you know, for them work is worship, you know, and it's not necessary, you know, that, like, you know, we know that the big industrialist, you know, it's not that, you know, they are just after women and they are just making money in order to attract women, because, you know, everyone has a passion, everyone has a liking also. If you cultivate your desire and inclinations, what you like to do in your life, then you love doing it. So, you know, obviously money is the outcome of that, but and then obviously, you know, this such desire and everything is there. But in you know, I think in our experience we see that the more a person is driven by sex desire, the more he is unsuccessful in his life, or he cannot give that much time to his work. He cannot make so much progress. So those who are actually really successful, I think majority of the time they have given to their work. Right? I mean, it's common sense. You know, if a person is just hankering for sex life and that's the only thing that he's doing, you know, he's overwhelmed by that sex desire, then he cannot do it. It's a great obstacle, because we know that we have to refrain from it. We have to restrict that in order to make progress in spiritual life or in material circle also. How many times can you have sex? See, unless and until you are like completely a multi-billionaire and you have given up things. Now you just enjoy if you are retired. But someone who is striving to achieve a goal, and you know, so in that process, I think that's the biggest obstacle in the material world. You have to refrain from that. So, but yeah, I mean, you know, if you see the common attraction in the material world, the first and foremost is the sex attraction. People are attracted, you know, and that is the main force of or inspiration in order to success in the material world. So, achieve, you know, to attract the opposite sex. You know, that's how you attract them, basically. Because in Kali Yuga, everyone is attracted by money. Even, you know, the look does not matter. If you have a lot of money, then you can still have a very young and beautiful wife, even though you are quite old. So this is very common, you know, that the entire world is driven by the sex desire. Everyone wants to get married. Everyone wants to settle. Everyone wants to have children so that they can create succession in their generation, right? So that is the main motivation for this thing. But there are people who are also workaholic. You know, they have a lot of passion for their work, and they have a lot of taste and liking. So yeah, I mean, you know, all these factors are there, you know, to have unlimited desires.
Also probably,
you know, like I know,
yeah,
I know people who have been in the scientific community who are very simple people, and you know, especially talking about Indians, you know, Indians, and especially, like, you know, there are certain people in the Nehru Planetarium, which I used to go long time back. I had some association with them. So I knew, you know, certain people, they were not very wealthy, but they were very much inclined to advance in knowledge. And for them, work was worship. And they were quite simple people, not so much concerned about money, not so much concerned about other things, but they had a lot of passion for their scientific area. So yeah, I mean, you know, it's all about, you know, being passionate about your liking.
Yeah. See, like Dr. Kalam, he is an example of that kind of person. He will fit that description that you are giving. Right. But he was spiritual in the sense, he was not as spiritual like following a path. Ardently following a path, but then if you see, his emphasis always used to be on spirituality. Like, he would emphasize a lot on the importance of spiritual culture, upbringing.
Yeah,
he used to emphasize that, and his life also, if you see, is very simple. But is he a devotee? Is he like a practicing, an ardent follower? Is he surrendered soul like that? If you say, then maybe not. But he was it driven by such desire? That is, we know that he is not even married. He never even married. So that association,
exactly, so.
And how will you say he's in mode of goodness or passion? I don't know whether, you know, how to categorize him.
That's why I'm saying, what you are doing is you are mixing the mode of material nature in terms of Varnashram system. But this is what I'm saying, that it's a different thing. Both things are different. You see this modes of material nature in the material context, and you try to understand the modes of material nature in the spiritual context. So in the Varnashram, if you try to fit this in Varnashram system, everyone is a Sudra. Even Kalam is also a Sudra, because he's ignorant.
Yeah.
Anyone attached to one's body, or, you know, things connected to the body, they are all ignorant. So they are Sudras, because they are not interested in spiritual life. How many Indians, you know, they will openly take the name of Krishna, or they will proclaim that we are followers of Krishna and Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead? All are afraid, they all are fearful, especially Hindus. The Muslim people, you know, they are quite open about it, and they will show it also. But how many Hindus, you know, they are openly showing about their religion? They are just fearful people. You know, they have so much pride in their culture, but what are you going to do with that pride when you reject the father who has given you that culture? So they, you know, it does not make any sense. They won't advance in spiritual life, because, you know, that's the reason we'll see most of the Hindus, they are more, you know, karmis. They only go to the extent. They are fearful of taking up devotional service. Everyone is ignorant, unless and until they will actually accept Krishna consciousness. Everyone is ignorant. They are all Sudras in the Kali Yuga. Whereas in the previous Yuga, you see, it was a proper discrimination of all the different ashramas and varnas, because they wanted to cultivate spiritual, you know, they wanted to advance in spiritual life. Except the demons, you know, except the asuras.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, so, yeah.
Progress, yeah.
Okay, anyone has any comment or question on this?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, next. Yeah. Chintamani Mataji, I'm saying.
Samasva Adhyanajam Vithi Mohanam Sarva Dehinam Pranadalasya Nidradhi Sandhubhat Banti Bharata. O son of Bharat, know that the mode of darkness born of ignorance is the delusion of all embodied living entities. The results of this mode are madness, indolence, and sleep, which bind the conditioned soul. In this verse, the specific application of the word too is very important, significant. This means the mode of ignorance is a very peculiar qualification of the embodied soul. Mode of ignorance is just the opposite of the mode of goodness. In the mode of goodness, by development of knowledge, one can understand what is what. But the mode of ignorance is just the opposite. Everyone under the spell of the mode of ignorance becomes mad, and a madman cannot understand what is what. Instead of making advancement, one becomes degraded. The definition of the mode of ignorance is stated in the Vedic literature. Vastu yathamya jnana varkam vipareya jnana janakam samaha. Under the spell of ignorance, one cannot understand a thing as it is. For example, everyone can see that his grandfather has died, and therefore he will also die. Man is mortal. The children that he conceives will also die. So death is sure. Still, people are madly accumulating money and working very hard all day and night, not caring for the eternal spirit. This is madness. In their madness, they are very reluctant to make advancements in spiritual understanding. Such people are very lazy. When they are invited to associate for spiritual understanding, they are not much interested. They are not even active, like the man who is controlled by the mode of passion. Thus, another symptom of one embedded in the mode of ignorance is that he sleeps more than is required. 6 hours of sleep is sufficient, but a man in the mode of ignorance sleeps at least 10 or 12 hours a day. Such a man appears to be always dejected and is addicted to intoxicants and sleeping. These are the symptoms of a person conditioned by the mode of ignorance.
Yeah, so here, can you see, make out that here Prabhupada is mentioning, people are madly accumulating money and working very hard day and night, not caring for eternal spirit. Is madness. In their madness, they are very reluctant to make advancement in spiritual understanding. Such people are very lazy. So now, how can people be lazy when they are madly accumulating money and working very hard? So did you get the point? So people are, in the material realm, they are working very hard. But spiritually, they are very lazy. So because spiritually they are very lazy, they are all ignorant. Okay, so they are like in the category of Sudras. Even though, you know, for material realm, they are working very passionately. Right? So is this clear? Aditya Prabhu? Okay, next.
S9. Asvam sukhe sanjayati raja karmani bharata jnanam asyave tulkamaha pramate sanjayate usa. So sana bharata, the mode of goodness conditions one to happiness, passion conditions one to fruitive action and endurance. Concerning one's knowledge binds one to madness. Purpose. A person in the mode of goodness is satisfied by his work or intellectual pursuit, just as a philosopher, scientist, or educator may be engaged in a particular field of knowledge and may be satisfied in that way. A man in the mode of passion may be engaged in fruitive activities. He owns as much as he can and spends for good causes. Sometimes he tries to open hospitals, give to charity institutions, etc. These are signs of one in the mode of passion. And the man of ignorance covers knowledge. The man of ignorance covers knowledge. In the mode of ignorance, whatever one does is good neither for him nor for anyone.
Okay. Any comments?
Prabhuji, one thing is that a man is a mode of business. Whether he is a philosopher, scientist, or educator. Now, but isn't his work also suited work? The word, whatever work he is doing, whether it is scientist or philosopher or whatever work he is doing for material, it's also under the category of future work?
Yeah, that is what we discussed, right? Just a few minutes ago, that Prabhupada giving this example of scientist and philosopher, it is in the context of material education. So generally, the mode of goodness is connected to education. Training, education, teaching, right? And the mode of passion is connected to more of work-related thing, fruitive activity. So in that context, it is mentioned that the philosopher, as I said, that, you know, the philosopher, scientist, they are probably breaking the regulative principles also. And they are not, they are probably atheists also. So there is no question of them being really in the mode of goodness in terms of the Varnashram system. Like, you know, they're like the Brahmanas. So they are obviously opposite to that of the Brahmanas because they don't believe in God. Or they are not concerned about believing in God or, you know, cultivating the relationship. So they are, generally they are, you know, Sudras. But, you know, it's given in terms of the material education. Because education is actually the quality of a Brahmana or someone in the mode of goodness. So in that context, it is mentioned here.
Otherwise, their work is also
suited
work only.
Yeah, their work is also in the work of ignorance. They are in the mode of ignorance, basically. Whoever does not cultivate Krishna consciousness, they are ignorant, actually. So in spite of knowledge being provided, if they do not take it, they do not understand, they do not cultivate, then they are in the mode of ignorance also. So that is why everyone is Sudra in Kali Yuga. Okay, next. Yeah, Ujjwala Mataji.
Yes, so 10th one. Rajastamas cha vibhuya sattvam bhavati bharata rajas sattvam tamas cheva tamas sattvam rajas tatha. Sometimes the mode of goodness becomes prominent, defeating the modes of passion and ignorance. O son of Bharata, sometimes the mode of passion defeats goodness and ignorance, and at other times ignorance defeats goodness and passion. In this way, there is always competition for supremacy. Purport. When the mode of passion is prominent, the modes of goodness and ignorance are defeated. When the mode of goodness is prominent, passion and ignorance are defeated. And when the mode of ignorance is prominent, passion and goodness are defeated. This competition is always going on. Therefore, one who is actually intent on advancing in Krishna consciousness has to transcend these three modes. The prominence of some certain mode of nature is manifested in one's dealings, in his activities, in eating, etc. All this will be explained in later chapters. But if one wants, he can develop by practice the mode of goodness and thus defeat the modes of ignorance and passion. One can similarly develop the mode of passion and defeat goodness and ignorance. Or one can develop the mode of ignorance and defeat goodness and passion. Although there are these three modes of material nature, if one is determined, he can be blessed by the mode of goodness, and by transcending the mode of goodness, he can be situated in pure goodness, which is called the Vasudeva state. A state in which one can understand the science of God. By the manifestation of particular activities, it can be understood in what mode of nature one is situated.
Yeah, so as I said earlier, that all these three modes are actually present in a person, and it's a matter of some mode being prominent than others. And, you know, so here this is also mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita. So it is like, you know, in Kali Yuga, it is like mixture of all these three qualities. Everyone has these qualities, and it will manifest according to the corresponding, you know, past impressions and karma of the person, unless they take to devotional service. Okay, any question? Okay, next. Sarvadvareshu deyasmin prakasha upajayate jnanam yada tada vidyad vidhridham satvam iti uta. The manifestation of the mode of goodness can be experienced when all the gates of the body are illuminated by knowledge. There are 9 gates in the body: two eyes, two ears, two nostrils, the mouth, the genitals, and the anus. When every gate is eliminated by the symptoms of goodness, it should be understood that one has developed the mode of goodness. In the mode of goodness, one can see things in the right position, one can hear in the right position, one can taste things in the right position, one becomes cleansed inside and outside. In every gate, there is development of the symptoms of happiness, and that is the position of goodness. A very, you know, this is like a litmus test, that how do you understand that you are in the mode of goodness? And I think so. Here the answer is that the 9 gates, if you, you know, all these 9 gates, when you feel that you are doing the right things through each and every one of these, then you can actually understand that you are in the mode of goodness. So as Prabhupada said, that with eyes you see only the things which are favorable for the mode of goodness. With ears, you hear things. With nostrils, you smell things. The mouth, you eat. Genitals, you observe celibacy. And, you know, so corresponding quality with all these gates. So when these are connected to the goodness, which are favorable to the mode of goodness, then you can understand that you are in the mode of goodness. And obviously, this thing should be steady. So sometimes, you know, there was again the same thing. There is predominance of mode of passion sometimes mode of goodness. Then, so if you just want to be steady in the mode of goodness, then all these symptoms should be steady. Okay? Obviously, you know, knowledge is required, because without knowledge, you can't even know what is mode of goodness. Next verse. Yes. Aditya Prabhu, are you there? Okay, Chintamani Mathur, you can continue.
Lobho pragrishmit aram bhaha karma nam asamahtiha rajati etani jayante vivrihe bharatarshabha. O chief of the Bharatas, when there is an increase in the mode of passion, the symptoms of great attachment, sensitive activity, intense endeavor, and uncontrollable desire and hankering develop. One in the mode of passion is never satisfied with the position he has already acquired. He hankers to increase his position. If he wants to construct a residential house, he tries his best to have a palatial house, as he thinks he'll be able to reside in that house eternally. And he develops a great hankering for sense gratification. There is no end to sense gratification. He always wants to remain with his family and in his house and to continue this process of sense gratification. There is no cessation of this. All these things should be understood as characteristic of the world of passion.
Yeah, so unlimited, everything, the hankering is always there. There is no satisfaction. Okay. For devotee also, this is a challenge, because as we know that being grihasthas, we are supposed to contribute more. With time, we are supposed to contribute more to the cause of Krishna consciousness, and we are supposed to become more detached from the material responsibilities as such. Okay, so we should divert our Lakshmi towards Krishna consciousness more and more with time. But the problem is that, you know, as the time will increase, we want to increase our facilities also, and we want to increase our comfort zone also. And then what happens is, you know, less is contributed for the cause of service of Lord. So it's a challenge for devotees. And that's the reason I think, you know, all the devotees must practice to contribute a minimum percentage. Just as, you know, we do a minimum amount of sadhana and we do some minimum amount of seva, we make the study and then with time we increase that. So similarly, some percentage of contribution should be there for Krishna's service, and that should be increased over a period of time. Yeah, so that's a practical way to actually understand how much advancement one is making in spiritual life. Like, you know, if you want to know how much you have advanced, then it's like seeing and checking, you know, how much you are able to contribute in terms of percentage. So it can be, you know, Lakshmi and it can be Seva also, both ways. And I think, you know, any devotee would not, see, it is not that, okay, some devotees would say that, well, I will contribute in terms of service. Like, I think majority of devotees, they will think like that. But it is not like that. It has to be everything. Whatever is an offer to the Lord, in terms of monetary service or in terms of physical or in terms of intellectual, everything. If you have the capacity, you contribute in every way. So you don't have to restrict yourself. Because as Prabhupada says, you know, the Lord does not see what you give, but He sees what you hold back. So it's very important. And then devotees want to go back to Godhead. Everyone is aspiring to go back to Godhead. But I think, you know, it's also necessary to see how much we are able to contribute. So it is, you know, even 10% contribution in the beginning, it's a good thing. And over a period of time, we should come close to 50% as much as possible. So, yeah, I mean, you know, this is how so anyone has heard Anand Vrindavan Prabhu's lecture on you know, early retirement and how to balance Krishna consciousness, spiritual wealth and health, right? I don't know how many of you have seen that video. And another video is that, you know, he has also given guidance to devotees in terms of how to manage their wealth and retire early and, you know, also use in Krishna service. So I think one of the lectures is named as how to financial planning and spiritual planning, something like that. So it's a more than 3-hour lecture. It's there in the YouTube also. So he, you know, he was just sharing in one of his lectures that because he has got a lot of personal guidance from Raghunath Maharaj, being a very senior devotee, Maharaj has trained him in all areas. So it is so interesting to know that although Maharaj is a sannyasi, but he has also trained him in finances. He has also trained him in married life. So Maharaj is expert in everything. That's a, you know, unique quality. So basically a devotee generally, you know, he is actually inspired by the Lord. If the devotees are advanced, they are inspired by the Lord in all the areas. You know, they get knowledge. Gradually they get knowledge in each and every area. They can train, you know, like we ourselves are struggling in that particular ashram. But these great Mahatmas, they can actually, they have the proper vision and understanding how to balance and how to advance in such life. So he was sharing that one time he asked to Maharaj that what is the ideal Grihastha life. Can someone answer this question, what Maharaj replied? Can someone guess? So he asked about what is ideal Grihastha life, and he also asked about what is ideal sannyas life, or when can one take sannyas, when is one ready to take sannyas. So these two questions he asked Maharaj. And, you know, what reply Maharaj gave? Anyone could guess? See, generally, what will you think of? As an ideal Grihastha life, what will you think of? I am really surprised to know that no one is able to answer this question. I think all of us are Grihastha here, right? So, what is the ideal standard of a Grihastha ashram?
Put Krishna in the center.
Yeah, put Krishna in the center. And then what? So, what is the meaning of that?
It means that everything in the house should be for Krishna, and your householders have to be understood to be Krishna's children, and all our servants of Krishna.
Okay, so that is the mood. That is the mood. And then, what about the contribution?
Support all the other ashrams.
Supporting the other ashrams, okay. So basically, you are half?
Charity,
okay. So, yeah, so basically you think about charity, you think about Krishna in the center, you think that, okay, everyone is the son and children and daughter and father and mother of Krishna in the house. So Maharaj did not mention these things. He directly mentioned that ideal Grihastha life is that life where one prepares oneself for taking vanaprastha. So basically, what he meant is that one has to plan to engage full time in the service of Lord. Don't, you know, even if you are 60, 70, still you are in the family, still you are having some material responsibilities. If you have planned like that, then it's very difficult. I mean, if you have not done any planning for that, then it's going to be difficult. But if you know these things and if you plan early, what is, see, every Grihastha devotee, they have to set up some plan in the future that they want to do this, they want to achieve this, they want to spend time in preaching, they want to spend time in, you know, whatever activities, whatever service. And obviously they can consult Guru also that this is what they want to achieve, their, you know, the goal. So the idea is that, you know, you become detached from the material world with time, as the, you know, as and when the time passes. You don't have any obligation to your relatives and friends, and you know, you become completely, try to become as much Krishna conscious as possible. And you become, try to become detached from your social obligation responsibilities. And you don't have to, so you have to plan in such a way so you don't have to spend your money there. Maximum utilization of money or service can be for Krishna. And so the meaning is that vanaprastha means, you know what? Vanaprastha basically means that the husband and wife will, they will not you know, for service, obviously they can stay together, but they won't have physical intimacy. They will refrain from that, and they will utilize their maximum time in Krishna consciousness. Right? So this is where Maharaj replied. Does this make sense?
Yes, Ram.
Yeah, otherwise, what we want to do? We want to stay in the material world. We want to take the facilities of the material world and be in the comfort zone. And then we say that, okay, we want to put Krishna in the center and we want to... So it is like, you know, we have to evaluate, basically, how much we are trying to serve the Lord, how much energy, how much time we are putting, how much contribution we are making. That is what is basically the proper ideal family life. So it basically means that, you know, you are planning for retirement from worldly responsibilities as soon as you can. And you know, so if you, I think I would recommend everyone, you know, because Anand Vrindavan Prabhu, he's a gold medalist from London Chamber of Commerce. The first Indian who actually got the, at the youngest age, he received the gold medal from London Chamber of Commerce. He has 7 degrees. In his area. He was in stock market for many years, so extremely experienced person. And so he is, you know, he planned right from the beginning, you know, he was in that direction that he wanted to retire early. And so Maharaj was actually guiding him in many ways, how he can actually plan, you know. And so now at this stage, you know, he's almost retired. I think he's like probably maybe 50 years or more, 50, 55 something. And he has full support of his wife. And he has, you know, he has, like, he's kind of done with his responsibilities and all that, like materially, financially, all that. So now he wants to use everything for Krishna service. But even before also, he was guiding many, many devotees in terms of financial management, you know, especially for devotees, because devotees are unable to manage and think about their finances. They don't think, they don't plan anything, even devotees also. And they don't know, they are not probably aware that they should have certain target in their mind so that they can achieve that target. And he mentions that even a family also, Krishna conscious family also, the father can actually retire after 20 years if he plans in a very matured way. He does not have to work, even if he has children. He can, 20 years, that's it. Like, he can retire in that time, that much time. So, if someone will plan like that, they can actually achieve. And so, the idea is that the more time we spend in sadhana. And he also mentioned one very important thing, that if devotees should actually focus more on their sadhana, even if they are working, they should spend quality time in their sadhana, even if they are working, because first, sadhana will actually save you in the old age. See, generally what happens, whatever we practice in young age, that becomes a habit and that becomes the liking. Okay, so at the when we reach old age, like, you know, there are elder devotees who did not practice Krishna consciousness for long periods of time, and they came to Krishna consciousness at a particular age of 50s, 45, 50, 60, like that. So they are having a lot of difficulty with their sadhana because they are unable to focus on the sadhana and they are not getting sufficient taste. So because of that, they cannot retire also, because what are they going to do with retirement? They won't be able to focus. And it's an observation that young devotees, you know, they have, especially as this generation, they are open-minded, they are willing to accept things, willing to understand things, they are intelligent, they want to use their intellectual. And if they practice bhakti, if they get taste right from the beginning, then even at the last stage also, like, you know, crossing 50 years, if they retire completely, they are able to focus on sadhana and seva. They are satisfied with that. But with older people, more difficult, because they don't have the taste. So to commit full time, it's a big challenge for them. And that's why they are unable. So he was mentioning the point that sadhana is so important. Everyone who is doing business or job or whatever it is, they have to spend quality time in the sadhana. And then, you know, the entire lecture is about managing financial things and all. So I think, you know, all devotees should hear, you know, those lectures. It's very helpful, you know, for devotees to plan their finances so that they can invest more in Krishna consciousness over a period of time. Right? So does this make sense? You know, this is what you answered about of idle grihastha life. Does this make sense to everyone?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. And so then what do you expect that Maharaj answered about the second question, that when is one qualified to take sannyas, or when is the right time for sannyas? Actually, I will tell one more thing that Anandam Prabhu was sharing. And so it might sound a bit heavy, you know, thing, but to certain degree, it is true also. So, like, you know, and that is, I think, you know, in the footsteps of Queen Kunti Maharani also, because what did Kunti Maharani pray? She wanted to, well, what is the famous prayer of Queen Kunti? What she wanted to,
give more,
like anyone can.
Give more problems so that she can remember Lord.
Give more problems. Okay, that is one of the very important prayers. But what about the other prayer, which is in this context that we are discussing?
I mean, let my attachment to the Pandavas, to the Vishnu.
Yes. They are all severe. They should be severe. So now you see, she is a pure devotee. The relatives are pure devotees. But she's still praying like that. Let my attachments be severed. Why? Because this is reality, that at the end, no one is going to save you. Prabhupada also says that a man has to fly their own plane. No one can save a person. So even Draupadi, she was not saved by the Pandavas. She was saved by Krishna. And so, so obviously she's, you know, she in one way she's taking exclusive shelter of the Lord. She wants to take exclusive shelter of the Lord. And the attachments that she's talking about, you know, these are material attachments. Okay, so spiritual attachments, association of devotees is obviously always there. And we, you know, we never ask for breaking these attachments. But we also recognize and realize that at the end of our death, you know, the end period, or at a critical period, only the Lord is going to come and save us. Because let's say if you are without devotee somewhere, and death will come at any point of time, or, you know, some emergency will come, so then who is going to protect you? So if you are attached to your relatives, friends, and, you know, the first thing you remember is all your relatives and all everyone. At the end, you will probably remember the Lord. So in that way, you know, she is praying that let my attachment be severed, because I want to, you know. So this is also the thing, you know, that to the extent that she is praying to disconnect herself from her own children. So can you imagine? Now what if the children are not devotees? Why are you so attached to them? So we should, so see, with time we have to take these decisions where we should try to disconnect with them. You know, we try to, the obligation should go away gradually. We should not become obliged to them so much, you know, as much as possible. Because, you know, if you are unable to plan like that, then it will be a difficult situation. So material responsibilities should be given up at certain point of time. Or you plan in such a way that you give it up. And how to do it, it's a, you know, I think it's a very personal, you know, this thing. Because everyone's circumstances are very different, you know, from each other. So I think, you know, so probably it's better to take proper guidance on how to achieve that kind of stage where we actually get disconnected and we spend more time in Krishna consciousness. Okay, so any questions on this? Any clarification? Okay, second, you know, about the Sanya's question. So, what do you think Maharaj answered? So, this is in context with a Grihastha seeking Sanyas.
If one is well situated in the Grihastha ashram, then that itself is Sanyas.
Grihastha devotee always wants to think of that first. That, yeah, my situation is good.
Not good. Means like a sannyasi, detached, and in Krishna's within.
So see, first of all, it's wrong to assume that a Grihastha is a sannyasi, unless and until he is coming to the state of Vanaprastha, that or at least the feeling of Vanaprastha, the mood of Vanaprastha is coming. Okay. Which means that, you know, he is detached from many things. He is completely focused, you know, he wants to channelize this. So actually in that context we can say that, okay, yeah, the Grihastha is actually kind of sannyasi, you know. So although he is married, but he is not interested so much in his Grihastha's, you know, obviously he has done with his responsibilities. No, we don't say that one should escape from responsibility, but he's done with his responsibilities. But after that, you know, he is detached now. And he is trying to focus everything in the service of Krishna. So that is ideal Grihastha, as you know, Maharaj says that Vanaprastha feeling and mood has to come. Okay. Anyways, but this is not what Maharaj replied. You know, he said that a devotee is ready for sannyas, especially a Grihastha, you know, when his wife would voluntarily go to the spiritual master and tell him that my Prabhuji has finished all his responsibilities, he has taken care of me very nicely, I am very happy and satisfied. Even if he takes sannyas, I will be happy, and I want that he should take sannyas because together we can progress in Krishna consciousness. So at that time, this is the ideal stage where a Grihastha can actually take sannyas. This is what Maharaj replied. And obviously, you know, it makes sense because ultimately he's saying in context of, you know, the how the wife is actually feeling about the husband. So is that the husband's desire because of his passion? Because, you know, he's not able to balance his ashram, or some, you know, he's trying to escape from that, or, you know, whether he's not having a proper relationship with wife, that's why he wants to take sannyas. So Maharaj said that, you know, this is how, you know, the ideal sannyas is, you know, the Grihastha sannyas, they have to, it should be coming from the wife voluntarily. Then that, you know, devotee. So very, very practical and very logical also, right?
Yes. This is the second question.
Yes.
When a Vanaprastha, a Grihastha, after Vanaprastha, when he can take sannyas means when the wife gives permission or she goes and tells the spiritual master.
Voluntarily she will go and, you know, happily and voluntarily she will go.
Yeah.
And she will talk to the spiritual master that
My husband
he wants sannyas, and I am approving that, you know, and I'm quite happy. He has finished his responsibilities, and so, yeah.
The first one, Grihastha to Vanaprastha.
Yeah.
That was how, like, when you're prepared for that, or, I mean, just skip my mind again, just I want to re-establish that in my mind. What was the question and what was the answer?
So you are asking about the ideal Grihastha life, the answer that Maharaj gave?
Yeah. Yes, ideal grahastha life means one who prepares for vanaprastha. That is the answer, no?
Yeah, one who is, you know, one who is preparing for vanaprastha. So basically, okay. Yeah, I mean, you know, complete, it makes sense, you know. Or at least one has developed that mood of vanaprastha from within. Although they might officially or externally, they might not do it for certain reasons. But internally, they have cultivated that kind of mood.
Okay, Guruji.
You know, like, you know, for example, you know, we have like my own Shiksha Guru, Kalakanta Prabhu. He is in one of our vanaprastha ashram. And then I think probably even Sankarshan Das Adhikari, probably he is also into vanaprastha. He does travel with his wife and preach. They preach together. But, you know, preaching is a service. So, you know, I think internally, you know, they have cultivated their attitude that they want to now dedicate their life to Prabhupada's mission. I mean, I'm pretty sure that other Grihastha devotees also probably, they are there, you know, many examples. There are Grihastha devotees who are also living in the temple. They are serving full time. So, yeah, anyways, so let us, you know, go ahead with the next verse. Okay, so who read the verse?
Somebody, I will read it.
You have to read it or you finished?
I think it's this chapter.
Okay, anyway, the 13th verse. Shri Kumar Prabhu, did you read?
I read it.
Actually, you read. Okay. So, Ujjwala Mataji.
No, I will read this 13th chapter.
Okay.
When there is an increase in the mode of ignorance, O son of Kunti, so through darkness, inertia, madness, and illusion are manifested. So first, when there is no illumination, knowledge is absent. One in the mode of ignorance does not work by a regulated principle. He wants to act whimsically for no purpose. Even though he has the capacity to work, he makes no endeavor. This is called illusion. Although consciousness is going on, life is inactive. These are the symptoms of one in the mode of ignorance.
Right, yeah, okay. Next verse.
यदा सत्त्वे प्रवृद्धे तु प्रलयं याति देहभृत् ततोत्तमविदां लोकाम् अमलं प्रतिपद्यते. When one dies in the mode of goodness, he attains to the pure higher planets of the great sages. One in goodness attains higher planetary systems like Brahmaloka or Janaloka and there enjoys godly happiness. The word amalam is significant. It means free from the modes of passion and ignorance. There are impurities in the material world, but the mode of goodness is the purest form of existence in the material world. There are different kinds of planets for different kinds of living entities. Those who die in the mode of goodness are elevated to the planets where great sages and great devotees live.
Yeah, so this mode of goodness is still in the material realm. And for spiritual life, we require transcendental goodness or Sudha Sattva to understand Vasudev, right? Okay, next. Rajasi pralayam gatva karma sangi sujayate tatha pralinas tamsi muddha yoni sujayate. When one dies in the mode of passion, he takes birth among those engaged in fruitive activities, and one dies in the mode of ignorance, he takes birth in the animal kingdom. some people have the impression that when the soul reaches a platform human life, it never goes down again. That is incorrect. According to this verse, one develops the mode of ignorance, after which death is degraded to the animal form of life. From there, one has to again elevate himself by an evolutionary process to come again to the human form of life. Therefore, those who are actually serious about human life should take to the modes of goodness and in good association transcend the modes and become situated in Krishna consciousness. This is the aim of human life. Otherwise, there is no guarantee that the human being will attain to the human status. So now, every human being, because they are conditioned by the three modes of material nature, and as in the Bhagavad Gita earlier, it is mentioned that some particular quality of goodness or ignorance, some particular mode is predominant. So that means that the three modes are present in a human being. But if you consider the entire lifespan of a human being, the major dominating factor, if that is more of ignorance, then he becomes an animal. If it is majorly passion, then he takes birth in the earth planet. He takes a human form, fruitive activities he will do. And if he is majorly dominated by goodness, then he will go to Swarga or higher planets. So like that. So I think in that context we have to see, because we cannot say that a person has always been steady in the mode of goodness right from the beginning. It's difficult to say like that, especially in Kali Yuga. So what is the major tendency or the major influence that we have to consider? I think, you know, this is what Krishna basically arranges. And now then, who knows, you know, someone in the mode of ignorance, he might chant the holy name or he might come in contact with devotees. So it's not necessary that he will degrade himself. He might get another human form of life directly, even though he might be in the mode of ignorance. And some might be in the mode of goodness, but if they are attached to their activities, they might degrade themselves in the upcoming lifetimes. So it's a very complicated karma, karmic cycle. Right? Okay. Any question on this?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Next. Yes, Chintamani Mataji.
Parmana Sukriti Yahu Tatikam Nirmalam Palam Rajatastu Palam Dukham Agyanam Tamasa Palam. The result of pious action is pure and is said to be in the mode of goodness. But action done in the mode of passion results in misery. An action performed in the mode of ignorance results in foolishness. Purport. The result of pious activities in the mode of goodness is pure. Therefore, the sages, who are free from all illusions, are situated in happiness. But activities in the mode of passion are simply miserable. Any activity for material happiness is bound to be defeated. If, for example, one wants to have a skyscraper, so much human misery has to be undergone before a big skyscraper can be built. The financier has to take much trouble to earn a mass of wealth, and those who are slaving to construct the building have to render physical toil. The miseries are there. As Bhagavad Gita says, that in any activity performed under the spell of the mode of passion, there is definitely great misery. There may be a little so-called mental happiness. I have this house or this money, but this is not actual happiness. As far as the mode of ignorance is concerned, the performer is without knowledge. And therefore, all his activities result in present misery. And afterwards, he will go on towards animal life. Animal life is always miserable. Although under the spell of the illusory energy, Maya, the animals do not understand this. Slaughtering poor animals is also due to the mode of ignorance. The animal killers do not know that in the future, the animal will have a body suitable to kill them. That is the law of nature. In human society, if one kills a man, he has to be hanged. That is the law of the state. Because of ignorance, people do not perceive that there is a complete state controlled by the Supreme Lord. Every living creature is a son of the Supreme Lord, and he does not tolerate even an ant being killed. One has to pay for it. So indulgence in animal killing for the taste of the tongue is the grossest kind of ignorance. A human being has no need to kill animals because God has supplied so many nice things. If one indulges in meat eating anyway, it is to be understood that he is acting in ignorance and is making his future very dark. Of all kinds of animal killing, the killing of cows is most vicious because the cow gives us all kinds of pleasure by supplying milk. Cow slaughter is an act of the grossest type of ignorance. In the Vedic literature, Rig Veda 9.4.64, the word Gobhi Krinuka Matsaram indicates that one who, being fully satisfied by milk, is desirous of killing the cow in the grossest ignorance. There is also a prayer in the Vedic literature that says, Namo Brahmanaya Devaya Go Brahmanaya Hitaya Cha Jagatitaya Krishnaya Govindaya Namo Namaha. My Lord, you are the well-wisher of the cows and the Brahmanas, and you are the well-wisher of the entire human society and world. Vishnu Puran 1.19.65. The purpose is that special mention is given in the prayer for the protection of the cows and the Brahmanas. Brahmanas are the symbol of spiritual education, and cows are the symbol of the most valuable food. These two living creatures, the Brahmanas and the cows, must be given all protection. That is real advancement of civilization. In modern human society, spiritual knowledge is neglected, and cow killing is encouraged. It is to be understood, then, that human society is advancing in the wrong direction and is steering the path of its own condemnation. A civilization which guides the citizens to become animals in their next lives is certainly not a human civilization. The present human civilization is, of course, grossly misled by the modes of fashion and ignorance. It is a very dangerous age, and all nations should take care to provide the easiest possible Krishna consciousness to save humanity from the greatest danger. Hare Krishna.
Yeah. So basically, Sri Prabhupada, sometimes he is criticizing the mode of goodness and certain times he is encouraging. Now again, here also, it also depends on the context, because as earlier mentioned by Prabhupada, that the mode of goodness can make a man puffed up, or he can, a man can actually become, can also become ignorant by the mode of goodness. Because if he is happy and satisfied, then he will not inquire about the absolute truth. That is also possible. On the other hand, person in the mode of ignorance, and if he experiences misery, then definitely, you know, he might start thinking about the absolute truth. So we know that from the Bhagavad Gita, out of the four people, one is the distress. So as long as, you know, one is there in the cycle of karma, it is very difficult and hard to predict which one will become a devotee. Okay. But when we say that the mode of goodness develops knowledge, you know, knowledge is revealed through the mode of goodness, and, you know, one advances in spiritual life, that also makes sense, because a devotee cannot be in the mode of passion and he cannot be ignorant also. So obviously he has to be in the mode of goodness, because knowledge is connected to the mode of goodness and satisfaction is also connected to the mode of goodness. So he has to be in that platform to advance in spiritual life. He cannot, it's difficult to advance in the mode of passion. When you have a passionate life, you cannot give so much time to Krishna. When you are ignorant, you cannot understand how to progress in spiritual life. Right? So obviously the mode of goodness is the best platform to advance in spiritual life. But from the material point of view, the mode of goodness, or for an impersonalist, for a jnani, you know, it does not make so much difference, because if they don't connect that with spiritual devotional service, then they can fall down. right? Okay. And you know, as we know that, you know, you do pious activities in the mode of goodness, you become happy, satisfied, and you attain a good human form of life in the next life. Or you can attain a lot of facilities, comforts, wealth, prestige, honor. So then what will happen? You'll get attracted to the material world, you'll get diverted, and you'll degrade yourself because, you know, once you get name and fame and you get wealth, then you misuse your power, right? So then, again, you are falling from the mode of goodness. Although not in the same lifetime, but in the next lifetime. Okay, next.
Text 17. Tatta vatsa sanjayate jnanam rajasya lobha eva cha pramado maho samato bhavato jnanam eva cha. From the mode of goodness, real knowledge develops. From the mode of passion, greed develops. And from the mode of ignorance, develops foolishness, madness, and illusion. So, but since the present civilization is not very convenient to the living entities, Krishna consciousness recommended. Though Krishna consciousness society will develop the mode of goodness. When the mode of goodness is developed, people will see things as they are. In the mode of ignorance, people are just like animals and cannot see things clearly. In the mode of ignorance, for example, they do not see that by killing one animal, they are taking the chance of being killed by the same animal in the next life. Because people have no education in actual knowledge, they become irresponsible. To stop this irresponsibility, education for developing the mode of business of the people in general must be there. When they are actually educated in the mode of goodness, they will become sober in full knowledge of things as they are. Then people will be happy and prosperous. Even if the majority of the people aren't happy and prosperous, if a certain percentage of the population develops Krishna consciousness and becomes situated in the mode of goodness, then there is a possibility for peace and prosperity all over the world. Otherwise, if the world is devoted to the modes of passion and ignorance, there can be no peace or prosperity. In the mode of passion, people become greedy and their hankering for self-endowment has no limit. One can see that even one has enough money and adequate arrangements for self gratification, there is neither happiness nor peace of mind. That is not possible because one is restricted in the mode of passion. If one wants happiness at all, his money will not help him. He has to elevate himself to the mode of goodness by practicing Krishna consciousness. When one is engaged in the mode of passion, not only is mentally unhappy, but his profession and occupation are also very troublesome. He has to devise so many plans and schemes to acquire enough money to attain his status quo. This is all miserable. In the mode of ignorance, people become mad. Being distressed by their circumstances, they take shelter of intoxication. And thus they think further in their ignorance. Their future in life is very dull.
Okay, yeah. So any questions about this? Okay, next. Ujwala Makhani. Are you there, Madhavi?
Yes, it is strong.
Yeah.
18th. Urvam gacchanti sattvastha majjetishthanti rajasa jaganya guna vrittistha adho gacchanti tamasaha. Those situated in the mode of goodness gradually go upward to the higher planets. Those in the mode of passion live on the earthly planets. And those in the abominable world of ignorance go down to the hellish worlds. Purport. In this world, the results of actions in the three modes of nature are more explicitly set forth. There is an upper planetary system consisting of the heavenly planets, where everyone is highly elevated. According to the degree of development of the mode of goodness, the living entity can be transferred to various planets in this system. The highest planet is Satyaloka or Brahmaloka, where the prime person of the universe, Lord Brahma, resides. We have seen already that we can hardly calculate the wondrous condition of life in Brahmaloka, but the highest condition of life, the mode of goodness, can bring us to this. The mode of passion is mixed. It is in the middle between the mode of goodness and ignorance. A person is not always pure, but even if he should be purely in the mode of passion, simply remain on this earth as a thief or a rich man. But because there are mixtures, one can also go down. People on this earth in the mode of passion or ignorance cannot forcibly approach the higher planets by machine. In the mode of passion, there is also the chance of becoming mad in the next life. The lowest quality, the mode of ignorance, is described here as abominable. The result of developing ignorance is very, very risky. It is the lowest quality in the material nature. Beneath the human level, there are 8 million species of life, birds, beasts, reptiles, trees, etc. And according to the development of the mode of ignorance, people are brought down to these abominable conditions. The word tamasa is very significant here. Tamasa indicates those who stay continuously in the mode of ignorance without rising to a higher mode. Their future is very dark. There is an opportunity for men in the modes of ignorance and passion to be elevated to the mode of goodness, and that system is called Krishna consciousness. But one who does not take advantage of this opportunity will certainly continue in the lower modes. Hare Krishna.
Okay. So probably I might get disconnected within a few minutes, but I will join back. Yeah, so here Prabhupada at the end, you know, he mentions that if one takes to Krishna consciousness, whether one is in passion or ignorance, can be elevated to goodness. But without that, they will most certainly continue in lower modes. So any question? Okay, next verse. Nanyam gunevya kartaram yada drashtanu pashyati gunevyascha param veti madbhavanso vigacchati. When one properly sees that in all activities no other performer is at work, then these modes of nature, and he knows the Supreme Lord, is transcended to all these modes, he attains my spiritual nature. One can transcend all the activities of the modes of material nature simply by understanding them properly, by learning from the proper souls. The real spiritual master is Krishna, and he is imparting the spiritual knowledge to Arjuna. Similarly, it is from those who are fully in Krishna consciousness that one has to learn the science of activities in terms of the modes of nature. Otherwise, one's life will be misdirected. By the instruction of bona fide spiritual master, living entity can know of his spiritual position, his material body, his senses, how he is entrapped, and how he is under the spell of material modes of nature. He is helpless being in the grip of these modes, but when he can see his real position, then he can attain to the transcendental platform, having the scope for spiritual life. Actually, the living entity is not the performer of different activities. He is forced to act because he is situated in a particular type of body, conducted by some particular mode of material nature. Unless one has the help of spiritual authority, he cannot understand in what position he is actually situated. With the association of bona fide spiritual master, he can see his real position, and by such an understanding, he can become fixed in full Krishna consciousness. A man in Krishna consciousness is not controlled by the spell of material modes of nature. It has already been stated in the 7th chapter that one who has surrendered to Krishna is released from the activities of material nature. For one who is able to see things they are, the influence of material nature gradually ceases. Yeah, so Krishna consciousness is the only way. Otherwise, one will continue getting influenced by the modes of material nature and being controlled by them. So here also the Lord says that no other performer is at work than these modes of nature. Okay. Any question? Okay, next. Chintamani Mataji.
Text 20. Guna Neta Gunam Etan Atitya Swin Dehi Deha Samadhavan Janmam Vithyu Jara Vichya Vimitto Mritam Ashnate. when the embodied being is able to transcend these three modes associated with the material body, he can become free from birth, death, old age, and their distresses, and can enjoy nectar even in this life. How can one stay in the transcendental position even in this body in full Krishna consciousness is explained in this verse. The Sanskrit word dehi means embodied. Although one is within this material body, by his advancement in spiritual knowledge, he can be free from the influence of the modes of nature. He can enjoy the happiness of spiritual life even in this body, because after leaving this body, he is certainly going to the spiritual sky. But even in this body, he can enjoy spiritual happiness. In other words, devotional service in Krishna consciousness is a sign of liberation from material entanglement. And this will be explained in the 18th chapter. When one is free from the influence of the modes of material nature, he enters into devotional service. Hare Krishna.
Okay. Are you back?
Yes, Prabhu.
Oh, okay. I just saw the
here.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we are in the 20th verse.
I had to do some. Okay. Yeah. I heard Chintamani Mataji was reading, right?
Okay. So basically, you see, the point is that Krishna consciousness does have, definitely it has effect, you know, but provided that the activities of Krishna consciousness are offenseless, then only it will have effect. Otherwise, it's a very long process. Because even the serial Vaishnavas, you know, they are also influenced by their nature. It's not that everything what they guide and say, it is from Guru Sadhu Shastra. Many times it is their orthodox nature, it is their culture from, you know, why they are saying certain things. And they do not even probably think that, you know, they are guiding devotees, you know, just because of their own nature or beliefs. And it might not even be according to Guru Sadhu Shastra. So before guiding the devotees, one should make sure that they are repeating Guru Sadhu Shastra. We should not try to guide someone because of our own nature. Okay, we should always remember that. And we should not act according to our nature also. Yeah, I got disconnected. Yeah, so please note, you know, I think Bhurijan Prabhu had he had written one article. It was posted in Dhanvats, and I think I had shared that on Twitter. Spiritual leaders or guides or, you know, devotees, senior devotees guiding, you know, from, you know, because of the influence of their own natures, rather than seeing it from a Krishna conscious perspective and guiding according to Guru Sadhu Shastra. So that's very important, actually. Nature is different and Krishna consciousness is different, okay? One should not mix these things. One might have a certain inclination to do certain service, certain, you know, everyone is unique, so they have their own uniqueness in individual ways. But it does not mean that, because everyone has their own nature also, and the nature is different. So if you want to do some service, or you want to guide someone, then you make sure that the nature shouldn't interfere, and it should not contradict Guru Sadhu Shastra. So we have to be careful about that, right? Because everyone is born and brought up in a different culture, and many, you know, for example, you know, many older people from India, they are very orthodox in their beliefs. And then they mix that, like, you know, they are probably very orthodox in their views, or they are very strict in their views. And then, you know, Prabhupada said certain things, so they will just focus on those things. And then quote Prabhupada, and they will try to convince others that, yeah, this is what Prabhupada wanted. But no, Prabhupada was very broad-minded, and he said many things at different times. And so we have to reconcile these things. You know, we have to also see the context in which Prabhupada said certain things, and how Prabhupada actually, you know, he adjusted so many things. So one should not bring in one's nature. Should not, the nature should not interfere. So although Krishna consciousness is, you know, definitely transcendental, but that transcendental aspect will only come when we perform offenseless devotional service. Okay, when we are without offenses. Otherwise, it will have minimum effect. So basically, you will be in more of a material nature only, most of the time. Okay, so does this make sense?
Yes, true.
Yeah, okay. Any comment or question? Okay, so let's go on. So, Aritra, would you like to read?
Okay, so is it 1421, right?
Yeah.
Arjuna Suvacha Kerlinga Screen Gunanetan Atito Bhavati Prabho Im Acharah Katam Chaitam Screen Gunan Ativartate. Translation. Arjuna inquired, "O my dear Lord, by which symptoms is one known who is transcendental to these three modes? What is his behavior, and how does he transcend the modes of nature?" Purport. In this verse, Arjuna's questions are very appropriate. He wants to know the symptoms of a person who has already transcended the material modes. He first inquires of the symptoms of such a transcendental person. How can one understand that he has already transcended the influence of the modes of material nature? The second question asks how he lives and what his activities are. Are they regulated or non-regulated? Then Arjuna inquires of the means by which he can attain the transcendental nature. That is very important. Unless one knows the direct means by which one can be situated always transcendently, there is no possibility of showing the symptoms. So all these questions put by Arjuna are very important, and the Lord answers them.
Okay, yeah. Next. So who read before Aritra? Was that Ujjwala Mataji?
Chintamani Mataji.
Chintamani. Oh, okay. So, okay, then Shikubha Tauri, you can continue, and then Ujjwala Mataji.
Shri Bhagwan Uvacha Pratapyam Cha Pravitrisram Cha Mahom Evam Cha Pandana Na Dvirasti Sam Pravitrisram Na Nibhrityam Kankasati Udeshna Vat Vishno Gunarevrev Na Vichyalake Guna Vartana Iti Evam Yo Vatistan Nehidate Sama dukha, sukha, sama sitha, sama roshana, sanchanana, surya, priya, priya, vira, kulya, nindata, samarshita, man, manapanam, jana, kulya, kulya, mutrani, bhakatya, sarva, varambo, sahityagi, dhinachayata, uchayate. The Supreme Personality of God has said, O son of Pandu, he does not hate illumination, attachment and delusion when they are present for long. For him, when they disappear, who is unbearing and undisturbed through all these reactions of the material qualities, remaining neutral and transcendental, knowing that the modes alone are active, who is situated in the self and regards like happiness and distress, he looks upon a lump of earth, a stone, and a piece of gold with an equal eye, who is equal towards the desirable and the undesirable, who is steady, situated equally well in praise and blame, honor and dishonor, who treats alike both friend and enemy, and who has renounced all material activities, such a person is said to have transcended the modes of nature. Topic. Arjuna submitted 3 different questions and the Lord answers them one after another. In these verses, Krishna first indicates that the person transcendentally situated has no envy and does not hanker for anything. When a living entity stays in this material world, embodied by the material body, it is best to be understood that he is under the control of one of the 3 modes of material nature. When he is actually out of the body, and then he is out of the clutches of the material mode of nature. But as long he is not out of the material body, he should be neutral. He should engage himself in the devotional service of the Lord, so that his identity with the material body will automatically be forgotten. When one is conscious of the material body, he acts only for sense gratification. But when one transfers the consciousness to Krishna, sense gratification automatically stops. One does not need this material body and he does not need to accept the dictations of the material body. The qualities of the material mode in the body will act, but as spirit source, the self is aloof from such activity. How does he become aloof? He does not desire to enjoy the body, nor does he desire to get out of it. Thus, transcendently situated, the devotee becomes automatically free. He need not try to become free from the influence of the mode of material nature. The next question concerns the dealings of transcendently situated person. The materially situated person is affected by so-called honor and dishonor offered to the body, but the transcendently situated person is not affected by such false honor and dishonor. He performs his duty in Krishna consciousness and does not mind whether a man honors or dishonors him. He accepts things that are favorable for his duty in Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, he has no necessity of anything material, either a stone or gold. He takes everyone as his dear friend who helps him in the education of Krishna consciousness, and he does not hate his so-called enemy. He is equally disposed and sees everything on an equal level because he knows perfectly well that he has nothing to do with material existence. Social and political issues do not affect him because he knows the situation of temporary upheavals and disturbance. He does not attempt anything for his own sake. He can attempt anything for Krishna, but for his personal sake he does not attempt anything. By such behavior, one becomes actually transcendentally situated.
Okay, yeah, so there are transcendental activities, you know, symptoms of transcendental devotee. It's a very advanced stage. It all comes naturally and, you know, for someone who is actually detached from the material world, you know, it all manifests. So, anyway, so these are the symptoms and qualities of a transcendental devotee. Next. Yeah, Ujjwala Mataji. So we just have 2 verses now to finish the chapter. So we can just wind, yeah.
26. Mam chayo avyavicharena bhakti yogena sevati sagunan samati ketan dhamma bhuyaya kalpati.
One who engages in full devotional service, unfailing in all circumstances, at once transcends the modes of material nature and thus comes to the level of Brahman. Purport. This verse is a reply to Arjuna's 3rd question. What is the means of attaining to the transcendental position? As explained before, the material world is acting under the spell of the modes of material nature. One should not be disturbed by the activities of the modes of nature. Instead of putting his consciousness into such activities, he may transfer his consciousness to Krishna activities. Krishna activities are known as Bhakti Yoga, always acting for Krishna. This includes not only Krishna, but his different plenary expansions, such as Rama and Narayana. He has innumerable expansions. One who is engaged in the service of any of the forms of Krishna or of his plenary expansions is considered to be transcendentally situated. One should also note that all the forms of Krishna are fully transcendental, blissful, full of knowledge and eternal.
Such personalities of Godhead are omnipotent and omniscient, and they possess all transcendental qualities. So if one engages himself in the service of Krishna or his plenary expansions with unfailing determination, although these modes of material nature are very difficult to overcome, one can overcome them easily. This has already been explained in the 7th chapter. One who surrenders unto Krishna at once surmounts the influence of the modes of material nature. To be in Krishna consciousness or in devotional service means to acquire equality with Krishna. The Lord says that his nature is eternal, blissful and full of knowledge, and the living entities are part and parcels of Supreme, as gold particles are part of a gold mine. And the living entity in his spiritual position is as good as gold and as good as Krishna in quality. The difference of individuality continues, otherwise there would be no question of Bhakti Yoga. Bhakti Yoga means that the Lord is there, the devotee is there, and the activity of exchange of love between the Lord and the devotee is there. Therefore, the individuality of two persons is present in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the individual person, otherwise there would be no meaning to Bhakti Yoga. If one is not situated in the same transcendental position with the Lord, one cannot serve the Supreme Lord. To be a personal assistant to a king, one must acquire the qualifications. Thus, the qualification is to become Brahman, or freed from all material contamination. It is said in the Vedic literature, Brahmaiva san Brahmapi eti. One can attain the Supreme Brahman by becoming Brahman. This means that one must qualitatively become one with Brahman. By attainment of Brahman, one does not lose his eternal Brahman identity as an individual soul.
Yeah, so this is also a very important verse mentioned in the Bhakti Shastri, basically describing about how to attain that transcendental position. So as the Lord describes here, that we have to be very determined. So whichever obstacles will come, we should continue our sadhana. And if we do that, that itself actually can transcend us to the modes of material nature. If you do it with the right attitude. Attitude is very important. The consciousness is very important. Again, you know, the question is that whether we are doing it in an offenseless way or with offenses. If offenses, then it can take a longer time. But without offenses, actually, we can transcend the modes of material nature just by steadily engaging in devotional service. That is why, you know, so ideally, technically, this is a state of nishtha. Or, you know, where one can actually transcend. So we know, you know, Prabhupada says that the modes of material nature are almost destroyed, you know, when you come to the state of nishtha. So you, the passion of ignorance especially, they are destroyed. So you can destroy the passion of ignorance, you can come to goodness. And just by being steady in devotional service, by being steady in sadhana, seva and like whatever. So this steadiness in bhakti is extremely important. And that itself indicates that you are tolerant, you are developing humility to some extent, because no one can be steady in bhakti without being tolerant, without being humble. So to some degree, the quality of tolerance and bhakti, humility will manifest in your heart. Then only you will be able to sustain Krishna consciousness for a long time, steadily. Right? So, very important quality. Okay, so any comment or question on this? The last verse of the 14th chapter. Brahmano hi pratishtaham amrityasya vyasya cha sasvatasya cha dharmasya sukha saikani prakasya cha. And I am the base of the impersonal Brahman, which is immortal, imperishable, and eternal, and is the constitutional position of ultimate happiness. The constitution of Brahman is immortality, imperishability, eternity, and happiness. Brahman is the beginning of transcendental realization. Paramatma, the Super Soul, is the middle, second stage in transcendental realization. And the Supreme Personality of God is the ultimate realization of the Absolute Truth. Therefore, both Paramatma and impersonal Brahman are within the Supreme Person. They are explained in the 7th chapter that material nature is the manifestation of the inferior energy of the Supreme Brahman. Lord impregnates the inferior material nature with fragments of the superior nature, and that is the spiritual touch in the material nature. When a living entity conditioned by this material nature begins the cultivation of spiritual knowledge, he elevates himself from the position of material existence and gradually rises up to the Brahman conception of the Supreme. This attainment of the Brahman conception of life is the first stage in self-realization. at this stage, this Brahman realized person is transcended to the material position. But he is not actually perfect in Brahman realization. If he wants, he can continue to stay in the Brahman position and then gradually rise up to Paramatma realization and then to the realization of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There are many examples of this in the Vedic literature. The four Kumaras were situated first in the impersonal Brahman conception of truth. But when they gradually rose to the platform of devotional service, one who cannot elevate himself beyond the impersonal conception of Brahman runs the risk of falling down. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is stated that although a person may rise to the state of impersonal Brahman without going further, with no information of the Supreme Person, his intelligence is not perfectly clear. Therefore, in spite of being raised to the Brahman platform, there is a chance of falling down if one is not engaged in devotional service of the Lord. In the Vedic language, it is also called Rasavaisa. Rasam hi evayam labdhva anandi bhavati. When one understands the personality of Godhead, the reservoir of pleasure, Krishna, he actually becomes transcendently blissful. Ether Upanishad 2.7.1. The Supreme Lord is full in six opulences and the devotee approaches him, there is exchange of these six opulences. The servant of the king enjoys on the almost equal level with the king, and so eternal happiness, imperishable happiness, and eternal life accompany devotional service. Therefore, realization of Brahman or eternity or imperishability is included in devotional service. This is already possessed by a person who is engaged in devotional service. The living entity, although Brahman by nature, has the desire to lord it over the material world, and due to this, he falls down. In his constitutional position, living entity is about the three modes of material nature, but association with material nature entangles him in the different modes of material nature, goodness, passion, ignorance. Through the association of these three modes, his desire to dominate the material world is there by engagement in devotional service in full Krishna consciousness. He is immediately situated in the transcendental position, and his unlawful desire to control material nature is removed. Therefore, the process of devotional service, beginning with hearing, chanting, remembering the prescribed nine methods for realizing devotional service, should be practiced in the association of devotees. Gradually, by such association, by the influence of the spiritual master, one's material desire to dominate is removed, and one becomes firmly situated in the Lord's transcendental loving service. This method is prescribed from the 22nd to the last verse of this chapter. Devotional service to the Lord is very simple. One should always engage in service of Lord, should eat the remnant of foodstuff offered to deity, smell the flowers offered to the feet of Lord, see the places where the Lord had his transcendental pastimes, read of the different activities of the Lord, his justification of love with his devotees, chant always the transcendental vibration, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, and observe the fasting days commemorating the appearances and disappearances of the Lord and his devotees. By following such a process, one becomes completely detached from all material activities. One who can thus situate himself in the Brahma Jyotir or different varieties of the Brahman conception is equal to the Supreme Personality of Godhead in quality. Thus end the Bhaktivinoda Purport, 14th chapter of Srimad Bhagavad Gita in the matter of the three modes of material nature. Hari Bol. So, I think probably this is the first time that we have finished the entire chapter in one class.
Yes,
so, but I'm not sure, like, I don't remember, but I think this is what, out of the, you know, the other 13 chapters, I think this is the only chapter that we have finished in one class. So anyways, you know, this is a very important verse also in the Bhakti Shastri, Brahmana hi Pratishtham. This is evidence from the Bhagavad Gita where Krishna is saying that I am the basis of the impersonal Brahman. I am the one who is actually sustaining the Brahman. So if someone will say that Brahman is, Krishna is manifestation of Brahman, you can quote this verse. Okay. Now, obviously, you know, the gradual development and realization of all living entity comes to Brahman stage. That's, which basically means Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate, right, in the previous verse, that we transcend the modes of material nature and come to the level of Brahman. That means that qualitatively we become one with the Lord. Because we transcend the modes of material nature, and so we realize that we are the spirit soul. Okay. But that is not enough, that is not sufficient, because that Brahman realization can also be to merge in the Brahman, or to become one with Brahman. So it does not stop there. So it should go ahead with the Paramatma realization, coming to the concept that the Lord is actually present in the material creation and He is the controller of the material creation. Okay, and there is variety. So that conception is called the Paramatma realization. And then beyond that, in the spiritual, there is a spiritual world and the Lord is having pastimes. So that is the Bhagavan conception. So these are all gradual stages of development, and one progresses accordingly, you know. So it is mentioned that generally when one crosses the stage of Nishtha, one comes to the stage of Brahman, and then, you know, as one becomes attached to the Lord, you know, comes to the state of Asakti and Bhava and can start seeing the Lord everywhere, comes to the Paramatma realization. And then one when comes to the love of Prema, then one gets situated in the Bhagwan conception. So now this, you know, very important word from Taittiriya Upanishad, Rasa Vaisa. Also another evidence in the Shastra where it is mentioned that the Supreme Lord has, it is the reservoir of pleasure. It is the, you know, so how, you know, this concept of Ras cannot exist if the Supreme is not a person and he is without Shakti. So without Shakti, the Supreme becomes Brahman. Right? Because the Supreme is all pervading, but he does not possess any energy. So that conception is boiled down to the Brahman conception. So when you talk about Shakti, the Shakti, you add Brahman with Shakti, it becomes Bhagwan. Okay? And that's the reason the Supreme, because of the energy, it experiences Rasa. So that experience of Rasa is there with the living entity. And through that experience, the living entity becomes transcendentally blissful. This is a very important verse, evidence from the Upanishad. So if someone will ask you that where is the evidence in the Shastra about that the Supreme Lord is a person, so you can state, you know, this evidence. Acharyas, they always quote this evidence. Rasa Vaisa Rasam Evayam Lagdva Anandi Bhavati. Okay? So we can quote this verse. Okay, all right. So, by practicing devotional service, one comes to the platform of Bhagwan realization. So, any question or comment? So, see, you can see the sequence. You know, the sequence is that Arjuna is asking questions about how, you know, what are the characteristics of a transcendental person, how does he behave, how does he act, and how to attain that position. So the Lord is actually answering that question, and then he also says that how to attain that position, which means that how to come to the level of Brahman. And then at the end he says that I am the basis of that Brahman. So it means that this is not a complete process. You have to go beyond. Right? Okay.
Yes,
so I guess that, probably devotees not asking questions because it's getting late. But I think, you know, from India, we have only Chintamani Mataji and Sri Kumar Puri. Otherwise, Aritra is from US, Mataji is from Qatar. Okay. So if there are no questions, then we can continue next week. I just wanted to mention that, you know, please take care of the timings, you know, please respond timely, and please be on time also for the class. So I will message half an hour before or 15 minutes before what time to start calling. So, you know, please note down that timings. And also, it will be best and ideal that devotees, they will confirm on the same day, like, you know, one day before the class. That makes things very easy, you know, because if there is some changes or then we can accordingly, like, you know, if there are only very few devotees for that particular day, then we can keep it on Sunday like that. So it's very important. So please make it a point that you, see, now you already know that we have the class on Saturdays, mostly. Otherwise, I will, you know, message that we can keep on Sunday because certain things are there. Otherwise, you already know. So then, you know, I think, I don't understand why devotees can't message the same day. Like, obviously, some of the devotees, they are doing it on a regular basis. But I think it's very important that devotees, they should message one day prior. And also, they should respond timely, you know, and join the classes on time. Okay? All right. So, thank you all the devotees. Hare Krishna, Dhanvat Ram.
Hare Krishna.